This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, I just love the days when it's 43 degrees and it's 70 degrees and then rain. Rain on top of that.
Welcome to springtime.
That's right. The flowers love it, and I'm not quite so sure.
I know it. It's nice to see. You know, you get a little bit of rain sometimes, some cooler temperatures, some warmer temperatures. You get a little bit of everything. You get the pretty flowers, and then you get the allergies on top of it, and then you get all nasally, but it's still, it may be a little inconvenient for like your sinus passages, but it really is a wonderful time of year when things come back to life.
I hear that. They've already been out to mow my place.
Are you serious?
I mean, there's not even any green grass yet, but they said, oh, we've got to get the old grasses out, so they came and mowed.
Man, isn't it the best when you get like the first grass cutting of the year, and then you smell that fresh cut grass for the first time in months?
Well, now see, I can't smell it because it's dead grass.
Oh.
I didn't tell you the grass is green yet.
Well, when it happens,
the dead grass.
They're mowing the dead grass.
The dead grass. They think it needs it, so, I mean, we're going for it. Who knows?
Well, if they think it's necessary to mow the dead grass, then by all means. But at least we have something to look forward to. When we do smell the green grass, then that'll be something it'll be nice.
It will be nice. It'll be wonderful. I mean, you know.
I assume the llamas are enjoying the warmer temperatures.
They like it either way. They're very nice, you know. They're easy to get along with. And they just play and frolic and have a good time.
Yeah. They don't worry about storms or anything like that. They just hang out.
No, they should. They should worry about those spring storms. I do. Yeah. And I'm always wanting them to go to the barns. But lots of times they stand out there. They won't go to the barn.
Why?
I don't know. They're set in their ways. They're like an older person.
Like I say, it kind of sounds like me, stuck in his ways.
they're set in their ways. And you know, I've often thought about that. What makes people get set in their ways?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. Because if we weren't
because,
set in our ways.
When you're younger, most people are fluid. You know, you can go left or right or whatever you want to do, and it's okay. But I've noticed when people get older, they don't want to change. They don't want to try something new. They're not going to try new food, a new direction. That's the other thing. They go the same way all the time. They never veer to the left or the right.
Well, that's a good observation.
Well, I just noticed that about people.
I never really thought about it before, but maybe it would freshen things up a little bit. Maybe we wouldn't get stuck in ruts and stuff.
I think so. I think once in a while, if you've been going the same way every day of your life, go a different direction just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
You know, just try that other street. Something you haven't tried before.
Years and years. I go to work the same way, go home the same way. You just get into
everybody
a habit.
Does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's habit. We are creatures of habit.
Well, now that is true. Jeez.
I mean, and then I noticed some people, if they were real nice when they were younger, when they get older, they're still real nice. But some people change. And they get grouchy and they get grumpy as they get older.
Why is that?
I don't know. I prefer the people that were nice and young. They were nice at middle age, and they're just sweet as they can be in old age.
Well, who are these people?
I think that's something everybody should work on.
I think you're right. I don't know any of them, but I would like to.
You'd like to.
It's going to be our goal for 2021. Meet some nice people who are nice at all three stages of life.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. Because, you know, it makes life easier. People will like to be around you if you're sweet and nice.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be around you if you're a grouch all the time.
Yeah, don't I know?
Yeah. And I know people that I can have a conversation with them, and if it gets too far out, I say, you know, I have to go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but, you know, I've got too much to do. I need to leave. And I just leave. That's all there is to it.
Wait a minute. I know a lot of people that say that to me. I got to go. I got things to do.
Uh-oh. You're in trouble. You're in trouble right now.
I'm in big trouble. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You know, I've been seeing people for years and years, and they've never had that kind of insight before. So it's a big day for me.
All right. Well, you know, we need to try to teach you as we go.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Enlighten you. Enlightenment is what you need.
So I saw, I think it was Thursday morning when the job numbers came out, I saw a report and I didn't dig into it because usually when I see these things, I'll go and I'll like Google stuff and I'll find articles and interviews and things. So I like your perspective on this. I saw Thursday morning when the numbers came out for jobs that they think that probably things may be starting to turn around and we may have seen like I think they put it as the worst of the worst is over as far as unemployment, and things might start turning back around, which they indicated would be a turnaround for the economy and things coming back. Where do you fall on that? Do you think that's realistic or?
Well, the jobless number was 719,000 unemployed. But I think, especially here in Texas, with us opening all the restaurants up, opening everything up to full capacity, some restaurants already said it's really helping them right now. Just in a few days, their businesses have turned.
Really?
Yes. And a lot of businesses, it looks like once we open up, they're going to be doing better. Things are going to be a lot better. And, of course, oil is up. You know, oil's in the 60s. So things in Texas, I think, are going to turn around quicker than other places.
You know, I remember sometime last year, wasn't oil like negative something for a while?
Yeah, I remember when that happened.
Yeah.
And then it finally got up to 20. It held at 20 so long, I was afraid nobody'd ever drill again.
Yeah.
You know, when it's that. And now it's $60-something dollars.
That's amazing.
Like $64, $65. I think, and people have told me in the oil field, that's going to go to $80.
Really?
That's what everybody's telling me, yeah. They said that we're going to have such a shortage that it's going to go to $80. I hope they're right.
Yeah, that would be really great.
It would be. And a friend of mine, they have been drilling on their property. They've drilled several new wells.
Really?
Yeah, and a lot of people were saying, you know, they're not going to drill on anybody because the price of oil was so cheap. But they had drilling contracts. They have drilled on a lot of people. So those people are getting, you know, really good income off of their property right now. So that's a good thing. It's not all the way back. We know that. They've laid off thousands of people. But it looks like they'll be rehiring. And it looks like, to me, business is going to be better again this year.
Boy, that's a great indicator of a big turnaround.
Yeah, because that affects us all. And everything that happens out here, if it has anything to do at all with oil, it affects everybody. And so I hope they do gear up. It looks like they will, and things are going to come back again. But, you know, thank goodness we're not depending on federal lands to drill on in Texas.
Oh, geez, right?
Yeah, and offshore drilling even. You know, most of it is just local production, which is a really good thing. New Mexico, on the other hand, You know, most of that is federal land out there. So, you know, they're going to be hurting a lot. So their economy is not going to be good like ours.
Yeah.
And so thank goodness these are just regular leases on people's land and that we're not looking to any federal land. So I think it's going to come back real quick.
Yeah, we really are set up in a nice spot.
Yeah. Yeah, and Texas is so diversified. We've got every kind of business in the world here. You know, we've done the studies on it. We've talked about, you know, we've got every fruit in the world. We've got figs, I mean, on down. Pecans, it doesn't matter what it is. We have lots and lots of growers. We have lots of big, huge farms. And then we've got, you know, smaller farms, but they're still a good size.
Yeah.
You know, and so every spring we've had that big, and I think that'll go on. I think all this is going to really be good this spring.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you know, after last year and all the uncertainty and the ups and downs, it's nice to see, you know, so many different things in so many areas. It's almost like, I guess, a domino effect that, you know, when one thing starts to come around, it affects other things. Confidence comes back. People go out and spend money. And then we've got stimulus checks coming, which are, they say will really help also juice the economy and people get back out there. And so... do you think that's going to play a big hand in it as well? Do you think we're headed back to normal or better than normal?
And realtors, we haven't talked about realtors.
Mm.
Houses are at a premium right now. There seems to be a shortage. And so realtors are doing very well. The people that are selling their houses are doing well. And, you know, I don't know what the number is. I didn't look it up. But there's a shortage of homes to sell.
Yeah.
So we know that's a good sign. That's always a good sign.
Yeah, it's definitely a seller's market right now.
Yes, it is. And so if a person needs to sell their house, now's the time to do it because the market is hot right now.
Mm.
It's way up compared to what it was. So that's another good sign of what is going to come this spring.
Do you think any of this is like false indicators, or do you think this is like actually like legit and it's like really, really actually going in that direction for real?
I think it's actually legitimate. I think the numbers are solid.
That's a good thing.
And, yeah, I think so. And I think unemployment is going to go way down. I think people are going to be able to find jobs, some good jobs, you know, like they have had before. And I think the numbers, I think if we'll watch this in the next 2 months, we'll see it.
Yeah, I hope you're right. And what about like retail? Are those I know these a lot of places, you know, retail, you know, whether it's, you know, stores or, you know, restaurants or anything like that. I know they've all really kind of redone their entire business model as far as, you know, dining and things like that. And at some point, people will be going back to restaurants and filling them to full capacity, like on a widespread scale. But do you think that some of the new ways that they've had to do things temporarily are going to somehow mesh with the old ways and they'll find a whole new dynamic to balance both? Or do you think they'll kind of go back to what they used to be or the new way?
It's going to be a new way for retail. Retail will never be the same.
Hmm.
I predict that because everywhere we read, the retailers are trying to get small. They're trying to get efficient for the first time in their life. They're walking out on all the leases. A lot of leases in these big malls, they're gone.
Yeah.
And they're having to refigure how we're going to do retail. I think retail has changed forever. We went so long with having to do everything online that it's changed. People now know you can buy almost anything you want in life online. You don't have to go to a retail store.
Yeah.
And like as we've talked before, a lot of the brands have went out. You know, we won't see them again. And then the others are going to be in smaller locations, I think, if they can get to it. Now, not every place has got a place that you can go and do a small store.
True. Yeah.
But all the ones I've heard talking, they're saying, you know, we want to do smaller stores, and then we're going to do our online business also.
Hmm.
And I know online is just, and we've talked about this, Amazon's putting in Dallas-Fort Worth, they're putting in three big distribution places.
That's amazing.
Their business is hopping so much. Everybody is buying online. And I saw the other day, even mine said, how many times have you been to Amazon this year? It said 36 times. 36 times.
What's that, like three times a week?
Probably so. But, you know, you find out everything you need, you can get it overnight.
Hmm.
And you don't have to go to the store to get it.
Yeah.
So people are, if you're really busy, you can say, okay, that's one place we've solved. We've solved that, having to go down to the store every time you need something. It saves a lot of time. You're getting the same product. You can send it back if it's wrong. And the retailers are realizing all this.
You know, it almost seems like this is something that probably should have been done maybe a long time ago. The resources may not have been there at the time, but it sounds like this has been a long time coming. It sounds like it's great for the actual businesses because there's much less overhead without all the massive brick-and-mortar locations. You start reducing overhead there. It's convenient for shoppers because, you know, obviously we're all busy and people like to have things delivered, so it works out for them. What about, like, the workers, like the employees and things like that, if there's less places for them to be?
Well, I think they'll be getting the products out of the warehouse.
Mm.
You know, a lot of them, I don't think they're going to lay them off. They're going to need more people in the warehouses to get the products out to the customers.
So it'll be almost like just a reassignment of...
I think it would be. You'll still always have retail stores. They're just going to be smaller. They're not going to be those huge, huge stores. Like Macy's is closing so many mall stores. They don't need them. They're seeing that it's not even profitable. So like Macy's, one of my favorite stores, they're closed a lot of the mall stores already in Texas. And I forgot how many they're going to close. They're closing all those. It's not profitable.
Yeah.
Because people can go online and order from them.
Do you think that the time is right, or it's even possible for Amazon to have another competitor or two pop up?
Yes, if they've got the money and the working capital, sure, because it takes a lot of capital. Look how many trucks they have on the road.
Oh, yeah.
You know, look at the thousands and thousands of employees that Amazon has. And a lot of these others, you know, like Target. Target has done very well during all this. Because you order from Target, you go and you give them your little number, and they bring it out to the car during this.
Really?
They had the big store, but they were bringing it to the car. You didn't have to go in.
So you can just pick it up within a couple hours, I would assume.
Yeah, within 2 hours, you could pick up an order. So they were smart. You know, they got with it real fast. Walmart did the same thing. A lot of these stores caught on immediately. You know, people cannot come into our store because of this pandemic. So now that the pandemic hopefully is winding down, they're not going to change that. They're going to keep that going, I think.
Yeah. Interesting.
Where you can save time and energy, they'll just bring it out. And that's a good thing. Kroger has made a fortune on food during this time. They talked about how cash flow at Kroger is tremendous.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't heard
that. Food is a big, big deal right now. They have made so much money. It was talking about how much Kroger had made.
You're kidding.
And all the ones that did like Kroger, you know, and could keep food in the stock, you know, they have made a lot of money.
Wow. What do they, what's the, I mean, people have always had to eat. What's the difference? What happened?
I think the difference is everybody, every time they went to the store, thought it would be the last time they ever ate.
Yeah, I think you're right. So,
and they said, let's get all they've got. So there was a shortage all the time on different foods, things you could not buy, simple things, you know. And so you order all this, and then you get half of the order.
Man, I remember.
You could never catch up.
like a year ago, I remember standing outside of you know, like HEB, you know, like, you know, 5:30, trying to get in line to be towards the front of the line when there were shortages of even, you know, paper products, toilet paper, paper towels, cleaning supplies, all these things. And then food, you know, you'd go down the shelves, you know, even at like, as soon as they opened up the door, you'd make a dash, a run. It was almost like Black Friday. You know, you go in and then, you know, there would be like just massive areas of shelving that was just empty. There was no canned goods. There were no, you know, all these things. And I remember that like it was yesterday. I don't think those are ever going to go away from my brain.
Well, let me tell you a story. My son called me on Sunday morning. He had went to Kroger to get a roast. What size roast do you think they had available?
I don't know.
1 pound. Oh. It was a 1 pound roast. That's not even a roast. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, 1 pound, folks.
That's like lunch meat.
So that tells you how much meat is available.
Wow. Whew.
There was a 1 pound roast is all he could get. I wouldn't even have bought it, probably. I'd probably said, what do I do with this thing?
You can't even make a sandwich with that.
That's right. It's not even going to be big enough. When the time that thing cooks, it won't be much there, I can tell you. It's
going
to be kind of small. So times are changing. As we go back to normal, we'll never be exactly normal like we were. But I think it's going to make us appreciate what we do. You know, when we can get everything we want at the store, it'll be a miracle.
Yeah, we took that all for granted at one point.
Mm. Yeah, we all took it for granted. We can just buy whatever we want. Well, we couldn't. So I think that will change, too. I think the way we do things is going to be a big difference.
Yeah. It looks.
And the store, the ones that really made a lot of money during this, all your tire stores stayed open, all your mechanics, this type of thing, they went right on.
Yeah.
You know, all those type of things. I kept telling people, I want to own a tire store. You know, I said, those things, they have a waiting list. It's so long. It's amazing.
Really?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
See, I would have guessed, and this is just where, this is just, you know, from the other side of the fence here, I would have thought that, you know, they would have probably suffered a little bit, too, because people aren't, you know, so many people were working from home or lost their jobs or whatever the case is. They're not driving as much, so they don't do as much with, you know, tires and things like that. I had
you
no
are
idea.
Wrong, wrong, wrong.
Wow, that surprises me.
I had a flat on a Sunday.
Mm.
And they said, I'm down the street, and I called the local store. They said, there's like a five-hour wait.
Really?
And I go, what am I supposed to do in the meantime? And I called one other store, which is Firestone, and they said, well, it'll be several hours. We can get to it. And I told them how desperate I was. I said, I've got a flat. I've ruined a tire completely. And they said, okay. They called me back and said, we got some other people that didn't have an emergency. They postponed in order to let you get in.
Really? Well, that was nice.
It was very nice. And the tire was completely ruined. It was in shreds. I hit a piece of metal on the highway, and it just, I mean, that tire was gone in 2 minutes.
Wait, you were on the highway going, like, fast? I mean, that could be dangerous.
No, I was going 40.
Oh.
It happened so fast. And the tire just went, I mean, it ruined it that quick.
Wow.
So I had to drive it on the rim to even get to a place to get it fixed.
Did you damage the
rim? I'm just telling you, I have never seen it like it is, that the tire companies were busy day and night.
Wow. I mean, that's fantastic. I would have never guessed that. That's amazing.
Yeah. So a lot of companies like that, their business just went right on. They never missed a lick.
Your business went right on, too. As far as
my business went right on. Thank God we're not in retail.
Yeah.
I mean, if we'd been in retail, we'd have been gone. And all these people, look how huge they were, and they went under. They were top heavy. They had so many executives. They had so much, you know, vice presidents, presidents, whatever they had, and they couldn't sustain it. I would have thought all those big companies would have had millions of dollars laid back.
Yeah.
But apparently they didn't.
Yeah, and now the curtain's pulled back, and we know they don't have reserves.
They didn't have all that money they talked about.
Wow.
And, last week we talked about Hertz. Brooks Brothers. I mean, there's just so many men's stores that went under. They didn't have anything to sustain them, which I'm shocked.
I know it. You would have thought that they would have had a nice reserve someplace in case something happened. It sounds like a lot of these businesses that have been around for, a good century or so may have been operating on a really thin line. And it's a little disturbing.
I think they were paying somebody a bunch of money, millions.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. Victoria's Secret, they've been closing all those stores. And I guess people didn't need that anymore. I mean, they can just go to your local place and get all the undies. You don't have to go to this specific store to get them anymore. I mean, that was, and Godiva chocolates. They couldn't sell enough chocolates during this to stay in business in the United States.
That's amazing to me.
I mean, I would have thought they'd been eating a lot of chocolates and saying, I'll just stay home and eat chocolate,
I did.
But it didn't happen that way.
I honestly thought I'd had enough Godiva just myself to keep them in business.
To keep them going. I thought about you. I said, you've probably eaten enough to keep them going, but you didn't. You didn't buy enough.
I fell short.
Yep. And this week they were worried about Tangier. The shopping centers, these discount places.
Really?
They were talking about them, that they might go under. I go, gosh, I thought Tangiers, all those little places were doing so well. I don't know. But somebody was talking about them.
Are we at a place now where if these businesses that are questionable at this point, if they can hang on for a few more months, is there a recovery for them? Or is this kind of like it
no
matter?
Yes. I think in 2 months, I think things are going to be so good here in Texas and other places because Texas has different things. We don't have the ice and snow half the year like they do. And a lot of people up north, they have ice and snow half the year. So that cuts down on their retail really bad. Hmm. That cuts down on their ability to go out and shop and do things. And if it's that bad, you don't even want to shop. You just want to survive.
Yeah.
So it's different here. We have spring, thank goodness, a long spring, summer, and then fall. And I think things here are going to recover quite nicely. I think people are going to go back to work. I think our employment will be way, way up.
Good.
And I think people will be hiring.
Yeah. I mean, I know, we rely on oil an awful lot, but, like you say, there's so many things in the state of Texas anyway in different areas, from vegetables to cotton to wine to, all these other things that you've talked about for so long. There's so many opportunities just in one state alone. There's so much diversity, I guess.
There is so much diverse products here. When you think about all the products made in Texas, we could survive, I think, without anything from another state, because we've got milk, we've got meat, we've got vegetables, we've got the oil and gas industry, we've got good retail here. I think Texas will outshine any other state.
It almost sounds like it's completely self-sustainable.
I think it is.
Hmm. Interesting.
I think Texas can sustain itself without anything else.
We might be set up in a really good spot here.
I think so. And I think our worries are going to be more about all these new laws. I think that will be worrisome. It's going to be bad. We've got to survive that. But other than that, Texas will be doing good. I think that these new laws are going to hamper us and hamstring us. And other than that, I think just the normal things will be great.
It's really interesting that that so many restaurants and other places that even though they can open, they're still, keeping their own restrictions in place as far as, masks and whatever distancing they may have at each location. It's really interesting. I would have thought that a lot of places would open up, because I saw in the news earlier, and I don't know, it wasn't in Texas, but Illinois or Idaho, I don't know where it was, but somebody had like a mask burning party. There were several of them, and people would have like bonfires, and crowds of people would show up and throw their masks in the bonfire and burn their masks. And people were saying, oh man, if this goes on in so many different places, it's going to have such a devastating effect. But it seems like we're being a little bit more responsible as far as, you know,
and cautious.
Cautious. Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it.
Texas is being very cautious. Now then, I know of some restaurants that are fixing to put in a second, third location.
Really?
Coming right out of the gate. And, you know, we have this new Hawaiian restaurant, and I can't remember the name of it because I just heard it one time. But they said they're opening in Fort Worth. They're opening one in Denton, Texas, all around us. So the Hawaiian are coming over here to open restaurants.
Interesting.
I thought that was very interesting.
Towards, I don't know, maybe a year ago or so, you were talking about one gentleman who had, and you're going to have to correct me in this because my memory is fuzzy, but one gentleman who had, I think it was a steakhouse, had just expanded to a couple and then had to shut them all right back down or something like that. I'm sure you remember who we're talking about, but...
Yeah, he had 40 restaurants in the Dallas area.
Yes.
Yeah, he had 40 restaurants. And when he had to shut all those down, can you imagine? It was devastating. But then he had some employees that got the virus.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they said, you know, everything has to be closed. You've got to go to, like, you know, outdoor dining. Well, he couldn't do that right quick. And he had all these thousands of employees. It was a really bad deal in order to survive that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the restaurants are now saying, you know, we're going to let the people in, but we're going to require the mask of our help and the public. And I think they're right. It's too early just to throw the mask away. I think we need to wait 2 to 3 months. I think it's too early to say everybody just quit wearing a mask. I think that's a bad thing.
Do you think that approach will help save the economy, or is it going to end up, you know, putting things off more and having a devastating effect? What do you think will happen?
No, I think now that everybody knows you can go to a restaurant, that they're going to be open, and I think being cautious will be a good idea, that the restaurants need to be open. My gosh, they've suffered so much when they could only have, you know, a percentage, and they had to have 6 feet apart and social distancing. This is going to help them a lot.
Yeah, good. And get, waiters, waitresses, bar staff back to work and things going again. It'll be good for a number of people on a number of different levels, I think.
Yes, and the restaurants that would have went out, that, you know, they're just gone. And so somebody will always take their place, you know that.
Oh, yeah.
People love to open a restaurant, gosh, and it is the most risky business without the pandemic. It's the most risky business in the world because all it has to have is somebody says, well, you know, we went there last month. We don't want to go there again.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of restaurant owners say it's iffy. You know, on Saturday night, you don't know, unless you've got a lot of reservations, who's going to show and who's not.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a crapshoot, really.
It is. And there's a restaurant here in town that was one of my favorites. It was called Field Steakhouse. And I loved going there, and it was always full. And all of a sudden, he gets this wonderful offer to sell the building, everything. And he just announces, I'm closing. He'd been there for like 8 years.
Oh.
I don't know how much he made. Must have been a lot. And then he sells it. They bulldoze it down and put a Taco Bueno where his big steakhouse was. I mean, that's who he sold it to. I'm still laughing. I'm going, oh, my gosh, they put a taco bueno there. It just doesn't make sense. Life is crazy.
Wow. It must have been a great offer.
It must have been millions of dollars for his land and his building.
Wow.
And you wouldn't think a little old drive-in could afford it. But they must have had millions of dollars set aside.
Clearly, which many people don't have these days.
I know. And people I knew would drive by and they'd call me and say, Faye, did you see Phil's Steakhouse? They tore it down.
So it's not like you pulled up one day and it was a surprise. It was gone. You knew ahead of time.
No. He had sent out a notice when the last night would be. And so it was packed that night. Everybody knew this is it, you know.
Wow.
And I just couldn't believe it. When I saw what he had done, he'd sold the land and the building for a taco bueno. Wow.
Wow.
The people are crazy.
All right. Well, we'll get into investments and what all this economy talk means for people making money as far as investing goes and things like that in just a few minutes. But this is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
The phone number is 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com. You need to go to our website, check it out. It's got a lot of great things. And another thing, if a person has missed some of the shows, you can go on there and go back and see the previous shows and listen to them.
Wonderful. Very, very convenient. A wealth of information. Every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic this morning?
It is Renfro Foods. Mrs. Renfro's salsa.
Ooh.
Have you heard of Mrs. Renfro's?
Yes.
Okay, let me tell you the story. Mr. and Mrs. Renfro, George and his wife, back in the 40s, they were very poor. The people tell me they weren't middle class. They were poor.
All
they
the way.
They weren't middle class. All the way. And out of their garage, they decided to start the George Renfro Food Company. This is in 1940.
Wow.
Long, long ago.
Yeah.
So they started out there, and they were producing spices and pepper sauces and, you know, little things like that. And so they started making a little bit of money, so they got a bigger building, and they added syrups and jellies and then chow chow. And the two boys they had worked with them. They would go on trips with her father. He drove his own trucks. He would have to go to Arkansas, Kentucky, all different places and deliver the products. As I said, they were poor. They didn't have any money. And so after a while, you know, it was doing a little better. But this time the boys, Doug and Bill, went off to the Army. When they came back, about 1972, George, the father, passed away. So then it was just Bill, his brother, and the mother. Well, they did change the name to Mrs. Renfro's, to her salsa. So they named it Mrs. Renfro's Salsa. Well, you know, they still were poor people, even though they had their own trucks to make these deliveries in the different states. Bill became the spokesman. He would go to every trade show. He would go everywhere. He'd say, "If you tried our salsa, would you try it today?" I mean, he was selling it every step of the way. And, you know, it was hard to find 30 years ago.
Yeah.
30 years ago, they had to get out and talk about it because they didn't have any money. You know, they were just barely making it. And eventually, he had friends in, like, Vancouver, Canada. And he would ask them, he'd say, did you see any of our product today? And they'd say, we have it. We bought it. You can get it here in Canada. So, you know, that really made him really excited that they could do it. And when Bill started his own family, they still didn't have a lot of money, but they said he was a family man all the way through. They said he was one of the nicest people. He turned white-headed at an early age.
Wow.
And I think it was trying to run the business and having children, you know.
It's a lot of stress.
I always think kids will make you white-headed, let me tell you.
Yeah, they will.
Without anything. And so Bill became the spokesman for the company. He was running the company. And they said that there just wasn't a nicer family man in the world. And in the summers, even though they didn't have any money, they were poor people, he would take their kids on vacation. He never missed a football game or a baseball game with his children. He always put them first. One time he said, you know, as he was driving through there, he said, you know, they've got all those tomatoes up there. He said, I think we could get back and bring a load of tomatoes to the Dallas Farmers Market and sell it. So they said that sounded like a, you know, like a really good idea. And so they drove all night, brought it back to Farmer's Market. It was too late. They didn't need them. And he goes, what in the world are we going to do with all these tomatoes? And so he said, you know, we've got to do something with them. So they took the tomatoes and created a new recipe for hot and mild tomato relish.
Really?
Yeah. And so they took something that could have been a complete disaster and figured out a way one more time that they could make money with it. So that's how part of their tomato relish came about, because they had this whole truckload of tomatoes. And it was going to be a very big mistake. He said, we got to do something with these tomatoes. So that's what they did. And that was how they came up with their tomato relish.
Wow.
They make every kind of relish in the world. Peach relish, you name it. Every kind on the books. And they're now international. You know, can you imagine? They started in the garage, his father and mother. They never went public. It's still family owned. And all these years, they drove the trucks. They did everything. They went out and sold it personally. You know, went to trade shows, went everywhere to get people to buy their product. And everybody knew Bill Renfro very well. He just passed away at 86.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they said things just keep coming in about the man that the family didn't even know. Things he had done to help people, things he had done over the years. And everybody said he was a consummate gentleman at all times. And
wow.
So it's a wonderful story about the Renfros, how they started out. And like they said, we weren't even middle class. We were poor. You know, didn't have any money, you know. And they just made do. And they would drive these trucks themselves to the market. Whether it was Arkansas, Kentucky, wherever, they delivered the product in their own truck. They didn't have anybody. And like they said, they had no money. They did their own books. They couldn't hire an accountant. They did everything by hand. They wrote everything in their ledgers by hand.
Wow.
And they couldn't afford an attorney. So everything they did, they just had to do it by themselves.
That's amazing. I mean, people would, even with like technology and Google and computers and apps and things today, it's still difficult to start, you know, from that far behind the eight ball. Most people wouldn't have even started something like that if they were in that kind of a situation, because you need some kind of resources.
Yeah, if you were that poor, because you don't have the money to hardly, you know, put the product together, much less, then you've got to figure out a way to get it sold.
Yeah.
And so... their father, of course, he would take the little boys with him, and he would go out, you know, to all these places to sell the product, to get people to try it, and then get them to order some of it, you know, and they had to do it that way. It was all word of mouth. They didn't have a big ad campaign. They didn't have an ad agency. They just had the family. That's all they had. And their father, as I said, took the little boys with him. That's how they learned, was going on the road with their dad, learning how he did all this. He did the trade shows. He did fairs. He did everything where he could get people to try the product and then buy it.
He really worked it. I mean, that's a true salesman right there.
Yes. And Bill Renfro, they said, was the greatest salesman on earth. He never met a stranger, and he would just go up to someone and say, have you tried our salsa? Would you like to try? Let me give you some. You know, I mean, he was selling it every minute. When he went on the road to get people to try it for the first time. And he never met a stranger in all those years. He would just walk right up to people and talk to them and tell them about their business.
And then he would do great things for people without any kind of fanfare or anything, you know, just because they didn't even know. I mean, he was doing all these nice things to help people, and they're just now finding out about some of these things. That's amazing.
Yes, and a lot of people have sent messages and tell them, you know, that this very humble guy and what all he had done and the sacrifices he had made all those years and how many people he'd helped. And, you know, it took this salsa and actually put it on the map. It is now international. They sell their salsa all over the world. Can you imagine?
That's amazing. It's fascinating to see somebody go from absolutely, like, literally nothing to an international company like that.
It really is. And to think they Oh, and the other thing about him is if he didn't get an invoice from a company, he would tell his children, he'd say, okay, you call up that company, you find out why I don't have invoice. You get me that invoice. It's not right. And he would make sure that everybody always got paid. That was his goal in life. If he didn't get an invoice and there's something wrong with that company, you call them up, you get me invoice. And they would call him and say, we didn't receive your invoice and we need to pay you.
Wow.
And he always made sure that everybody got paid. He knew who he owed, and he wondered, why have you not sent invoice?
Wow.
And he would make the children get on the phone and call them and get those invoices in.
Well, I tell you what, not
many
people would do that.
How many people do you know would do that?
Not many, that's for sure.
I know people that hide invoices. They hide them. I used to know some people that would put this guy's on top. Next month, we'll put somebody else's invoice on top.
Wow.
Put that one at the bottom. We'll lose it. We lost that invoice.
My dog ate the invoice.
That's right. And I know people that they were struggling, and they would just say, well, tell them we lost it if they call.
Yeah.
You know, if they call, we'll pay it. But, you know, don't pay it till somebody calls us and tells us about it.
Oh, that's
awesome. Yeah, and that was years ago when people really didn't have as much money as they do today.
Yeah.
They were struggling, and they were just losing those invoices every month. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, invoices today in this world, they're due in 20 to 30 days.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Walmart's the only one that rides them. You know, Walmarts are 90 days. They don't pay anything for 90 days.
Yeah.
And that small companies can't even stay in business doing business with them.
No.
Because that's not right. And I've often wondered how they get by with it. Because I've talked to a lot of people, and they've said, oh, they don't pay except on 90 days. Well, in 90 days, you've had to go to the bank and borrow the money to pay your people.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Unless you're a big company. Now, a big company can make it with them, but a small one can't.
And when they say 90 days, they don't mean 89 and a half. They mean 90 days.
No, they're
not
paying until that 90th day. And by then, they've sold that product twice.
Yeah,
probably.
Exactly.
And so they're just riding the small guys because they're so huge.
Yeah. So many people have gotten into, and they've gotten, a lot of people have gotten used to 90-day terms like that. It's just.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean, they're used to dealing with them, so they expect it.
Yeah.
But, you know, on a normal day deal, most people have 30 days.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you and I do.
I've got some that are 20 days.
Oh, my.
And, yeah, you have to pay them in 20 days.
Jeez.
Which is all right. If you know it, you can do it.
Well, how do we get 90-day terms?
I don't know. I don't have anybody giving me 90-day terms. But we don't have that. We don't have a lot of invoices because of the business we're in.
That's true. You know? That's true.
So you've got your ad bills and things like that and your attorney fees. And that's about, you know, that's your biggest deals right there. And that's just every month. So you don't even think about that.
Yeah. It's really, I guess when it comes down to it, you know, your overhead is relatively low compared to many other things.
Yeah, comparison with retail and other companies, yes.
Yeah, and then, you know, the fee. Well, let's get into it. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Is that part of what makes this type of investment, life settlements and whatnot, is that part of what contributes to the profit margins that people see? Because we don't talk about fees very much. Those are very, very low.
The fees are very low. It's $250 a year.
Yeah.
We don't charge a fee, but the bank does. And that's a small fee for everything you get. I love all the work that Nevada Trust does for us. They do so much to earn that $250 a year. I mean, I know they should charge a lot more for what they do for us. I mean, they will wire money. Like a lot of people, when they're coming on board with us, they're wiring money to the bank from other places. We're doing transfers, and we have to alert the bank we're doing a transfer. We interact with that bank every day, probably 10 times a day. If people are new and they need to know something, they're going to be on the phone with the bank. Lots of times when we set up their account, we have to give them special help in how to get into their account 24 hours a day. They can do it at any time. You know, we work with them night and day. So the bank is a big deal for what they charge, really. $250 a year is nothing for the hard work they do for us.
You should call them up and offer to pay them more.
No.
You're right.
No, that's all right. That'll be fine.
That was a dumb idea.
Yeah, that was one of your dumb ideas. And then we have Bank of Utah. They charge a lot more. They charge us a lot more. And people don't realize all the things we do. You know, we have 21st Services, and what they do for us is they check every account every month for us, and we pay fees for that, where that they will see if there is a new maturity, if they'll see, you know, getting the life expectancies. They do all of this, and they charge a lot for that, and it's worth it. So we have a close relationship with them for all the things they do. And then the customers, you know, they come first above everything. And, of course, our customers are making 1% a month. Like if it's a 12-month policy, they make 12%. If it's 24 months, they make 24%. And then, you know, they get paid their principal and their interest every time we have a maturity. And we're only doing stage 4 cancer. That's why sometimes we have to wait for policies. A lot of people just do life settlements. That means those people are not sick. They're just selling their policy. People will buy those. And, you know, they're not going to get paid for 15, 20 years. But they buy them. Mutual fund companies buy them. A lot of people buy them. So what we want is short term. We want policies that are going to mature, you know, up to 30 months, 24 months. We buy some that are 9 months or 6 months. But all of them have one thing in common. They're short term. The people have got stage 4 cancer. It has metastasized in other places. And that's what we're going for. And when people come to us, that's what they ask. How do I get paid? You get paid principal and interest when the person passes away, when it matures.
Yeah, it seems like that would be probably one of the big assets about a life settlement, at least specifically the type that you're doing, because of the fast turnarounds. Because, you know, we're talking about, you know, larger profits, lots of return on investment, ROI. We're talking about, you know, faster turnarounds. So people are getting their maturities faster. They're getting paid faster, which gives them the opportunity to take those profits, reinvest them in more policies even faster. So it just seems like there's this massive domino effect for why this is such a brilliant setup and a brilliant plan that you have in place, and you've got the historical data to show that it's actually working. I mean, people are making tons of money at this.
That's right, and we do have the historical data. We're upgrading it all the time to see what is making a certain person die at a certain time with a certain type of cancer. And, you know, we work all the time to see how many, like, breast cancers are maturing at a certain time. If they're maturing early or on time, like prostate cancer or lung cancer, you know, there's only certain types of cancer we even buy. Sometimes some cancers, they're not sick enough. The people are not sick. They have cancer, yes, but they're not going to pass away anytime soon. So we are after the ones that are going to pass away quick, that we can turn their money. Most of ours, 90% are IRAs. So, you know, we want to get this turned where they'll have more money to retire on. If it's a joint account with their wife, you know, we're working on that for them. A lot of people have more than one account. They may have a Roth IRA, a regular IRA, and a joint account with their wife. So, you know, we're working on that all the time to improve all the time, to get quicker results and to make them more money, because they're here to make money. That's why they came to us. Is they know our track record, they know we deliver, they know it's safer than a lot of other investments, and they know that it doesn't have the up and downs of the stock market. You know, you're never going to have that problem. you're not going to have a company go under like we do with Hertz or Brooks Brothers or, you know, some of the others that have went under because of the pandemic and retail. And thank goodness there's no retail involved in this. It's all cancer policies only.
Yeah, and I would imagine probably, and I know it's always been there, but I would imagine probably even now with you know, pandemic effects on top of normal, regular things that happen within, you know, the investment world, because we've always seen things go up, go down, you know, some war will break out someplace, some world event will happen, and it affects the stock market, and it'll bottom out. We've seen that for decades, but with a pandemic on top of it, there are extra, I guess, special circumstances that can affect things even more. I would imagine that's probably one of the big draws for a lot of people, is that they do have that area of, I don't want to, maybe protection is not the right way to phrase it, but the fact that life settlements are not affected by anything. They hold their value. People know what they're going to make. They basically know when they're going to make it. And it's really just a waiting game. They don't have to sweat the, you know, the variables that can affect other types of investments. I would imagine that's a big deal.
I think it is too, because people know you're not going to have the ups and downs. You don't have the losses that you have in the stock market or the gains. It's steady. It's just straight across the board. You know what you're going to make going in. You know that's how much you're going to get. Doesn't matter. If it's early, it's the same amount. If it's on time, it's the same amount. If it's late, you're still going to get the same amount of money. You might have to pay premiums if it goes over. Everybody knows that going in. We try to have the premiums as low as possible. I'm bidding several policies this week that the premium is 0.13.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's almost no premium whatsoever.
Jeez.
So it doesn't matter what happens. You know, your premium is just almost nothing.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is. And we're bidding a lot of policies. We're going to try to close some in the next 2 weeks, maybe sooner. We've got a lot of good policies that we're bidding. We're bidding them right. They're great policies, so we're going to try to get everybody closed, get everybody in policies within the next 2 weeks.
So, yeah, like you mentioned, if it does go over and you do have to pay the premiums, that's one of the things people need to know. And that's really, there are three major risks with the life settlement. That's the biggest. What are the other two?
Well, that is the biggest risk. Going in, you always need to know that the premiums would have to be paid if it goes over. So if it goes over, be prepared. But you know in advance what the premiums are, so it's not a surprise. So then the second one is it is not liquid during that time. Everybody realizes that. You can't have it liquid and be in a policy too. So we do try to have everybody where that you're in several policies. You need to be diversified. You can't come in with us and do one policy. It won't work. You have to have several policies, where some will be early, some will be medium, and some will be late. So that way it all evens out in the end. Then the third one is if a life insurance company ever went under. And we have never had one in Texas go under. Nationally, we haven't had one go under in years because they're so valuable, people will buy them at the drop of a hat. They would be a bidding war if one, you know, ever got in trouble.
Yeah. So you look at the risks, it's like, well, these are so low compared to, you know, other opportunities and what I think a lot of people are used to. It's got to be almost mind-blowing when people come over and say, there really, I mean, this is like literally it. There's like not another shoe that's going to drop. That's literally the whole thing out in the open.
That's right. And you're not dependent on a broker. You're not dependent on somebody else to handle your business. You're handling it yourself. You're calling the shots. It's your money. And that's why we always say, remember, it's your money, not ours.
What are we looking at for opportunities? I know you said you're bidding on a number of policies.
I think in the next week we'll have a lot of opportunities. We're going to try to get everybody in policies. I've got three or four big policies we're bidding on, and we'll be letting them know just as soon as possible on those.
You have a ton of regular investors who have been with you for years and years making money. You've also had a lot of new investors come over lately. So if somebody is new, what's the next step? What's the first thing they need to do?
Well, they need to make an appointment. They need to come in. We'll set them up. We'll go over it again about the investment, how it works, how you're going to get paid. that everything is done at the bank. We don't handle your money, and make them comfortable. Once they're comfortable, we'll set up the account and transfer their money, or they'll give us a check and we'll get them started.
All right. And so one last time, Faye, for people to come make an appointment, ask questions, set things up, get the ball rolling. What is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And the website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.